And good morning. Welcome to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, where this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and by the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information is available at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. And so today we're going to revisit something that I've covered in previous iterations over the years, and that's some of the federal appropriations process, which really sort of starts to heat up about this time of year, and sometimes things go places and sometimes they don't. Specifically today, it's the energy bill that my guests and I will be speaking of. The House has passed a version, the Senate has passed a version. They differ too much to just go through, so they're going to go to conference committee. And so joining me this morning, I've got a couple of folks. Kelpie Wilson is a writer, editor, engineer, and she works a bunch with truthout.org, and she's been a longtime activist down in Southern Oregon. Welcome to you.
Hi.
And Lynn Hargis works with Public Citizen's Critical Mass Energy Project for the past couple of years, and before that, she worked at an international law firm dealing with regulatory issues regarding electricity-generating plants. And she also worked at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for a chunk of time before that, and has written and spoken widely about the Public Utility Holding Company Act, and that's shortened, that's PUCA, and that's how we'll refer to it hereafter. So welcome to you, Lynn.
Thanks so much.
Okay, so Lynn, why don't we start with you, because you've got this extraordinarily long background dealing with the intricacies of PUCA. If you could just give us a couple-minute snapshot of, okay, so it's from 1935, so let's do why was it enacted, and kind of basically what has it done for electricity consumers in the past seven decades?
Okay. In 1935, it was enacted because they were the beginning of the Great Depression, I guess, or the middle of it, and the Power Trust, the big holding companies that owned electric utilities and natural gas utilities, had pretty much monopolized the situation and had many, many affiliates and subsidiaries that were buying and selling things to the utilities, making money off the utilities, taking the revenues from the utilities and investing them in more problematic, riskier businesses. And 53 of them went bankrupt, and that, of course, had a huge impact on the Great Depression, and 23 more had bank loan defaults. And it was such a disaster that Sam Insull, who was the head of one of the biggest holding companies that collapsed, had to actually run from the country to save his life. And that was, you know, the basic background of why PUCA was passed. It was passed to break up these gigantic holding companies, to make sure they were not recreated, and also to enforce effective state regulation of utility electric bills.
Now, in reading through this, and I'll admit that I've been familiar with PUCA over the years, but I've never kind of dove into the hundreds and thousands of pages that are available about it.
Yeah, it's a very complex statute.
But it seems like one of the key things really didn't so much have to do with utilities specifically. It was really more sort of financial regulation.
It was the financial regulation of the utility owners. And one of the things that PUCA did was, in order to prevent these conflicts of interest by owners who wanted to use the utility revenues for their other businesses, was to say that if you own utilities, that's all you can do. Have to stick to the utility business. You can't be in other businesses.
Right, because they were basically used to subsidize, in a sense, other businesses owned by the same person.
Right.
Or
well,
entity.
Yes, exactly. Like the first holding company application was from General Electric back in 1905, because they wanted to sell turbines to utilities, and they found it easier to do that if they actually owned the utilities. The same thing with Stone & Webster was a big construction company. They owned utilities so they could sell them their utility services. And then the biggest of all was when people realized the financial interests, realized that if we have utilities, we can use that money to finance various other businesses. So that's why right now an oil company, for example, cannot own an electric utility or a natural gas utility. Once PUCA is gone, that will change. And the oil companies are actually looked at as one of the very likely buyers of utilities because they happen to have a whole lot of cash on hand right now. Mm-hmm. So you don't have just Chevron, Texaco. You have Chevron, Texaco, Pacific Carp, et cetera. So that's, you know, this is the sort of thing that PUCA has prohibited for 70 years. Any of us that are younger than 70 years of age have never lived in the country without PUCA.
Right.
It was the biggest legislative fight of FDR's first term, and it was a huge deal to break up these big holding companies. So it's also a huge deal to allow them to come back. And yet, in the media, we are not hearing anything about it.
Well,
I've seen, you know, articles in the Post, the New York Times, the LA Times talking about the energy bill, not even a reference in passing to PUCA repeal.
Well, now let's bring Kelpie in here at this point, because Kelpie is someone who has been writing about this, although I don't imagine you have quite the audience that someone in the front section of the Times or the Washington Post would have, but
not quite, but we're getting there.
Yeah, but you have the advantage of, you know, being online, so anyone anywhere can get it without, say, having to have a subscription or whatever. Now, you released an article yesterday, Energy Bill Heads to Conference, Will PUCA Finally Surface?, in which you reference what Lynn just mentioned, the fact that there's virtually no mainstream media coverage of the energy bill, even in general, let alone the PUCA provisions. And you cite a small paper in Provo, Utah, Asheville, North Carolina, as among the literally handful of folks who've even referenced this.
That's it, too.
Oh, it's really just those two? Okay. So the House version passed in April. The Senate bill, I guess, passed sometime in June. And it's going to conference now. So I'm curious how you're trying to approach, if you still are, outlets to focus on covering this while it's still sort of in play, because it's certainly not a done deal.
Well, I'm just writing for Truth Out. My role here is a journalist, not an activist. I know Lynn has approached, and other activists have approached, lots of papers, mainstream papers, and pretty much rebuffed. But what we find is that in the alternative media, if we harp on something long enough, eventually the mainstream papers end up picking it up. So that's what I'm hoping to accomplish.
When you say we, you mean Truth Out and other?
Yeah, Truth Out and, you know, KBOO, the alternative media, you know, we're, that's basically alternative progressive media is what we are. And, you know, over the years, our media outlets have, you know, made a contribution to getting stories out in the larger media. So that's what I'm hoping to accomplish by continuing to write about this issue. And, you know, I got started in it last year. You know, this energy bill, this is the third or so go-around. You know, Bush has been trying to get this energy bill passed ever since he first took office. And, you know, I noticed this last year just reading over a list of things that were in it that I got from Public Citizen or one of the other activist groups, that there's this PUCA repeal. And I thought, well, what the heck is this? And why do I not hear about this anywhere else? And I've sort of been watching the media for the last year, and there's been nothing. And I thought, well, you know, as we get closer to this bill actually passing, someone's going to write about it. And still, you know, day after day searching the news media, there's been not a word. And, you know, what I said in my article yesterday was there have been lots of articles about the energy bill, and most of them emphasize the price tag, you know, various subsidies mm-hmm. for oil and gas and nuclear and a little bit for renewables, and they really emphasize that. But there's, you know, because this is basically an appropriations bill, but there's been nothing about this truly radical change in restructuring utilities in the country.
You know what's interesting? Kelpie's done a terrific job. We Molly Ivins covered us in her column. It covered PUCA in the column yesterday, and that's because of Kelpie. But the only press that are really following this are the business press, because they understand that this is going to be a really big deal, because this is like $1 trillion worth of utilities and utility assets that are going to be opened up to the global market, and it's going to be a shark feeding frenzy when this happens. There's just absolutely no question about that.
Well, let's talk.
And what's the problem is going to be, as Kelpie has pointed out, is that Enron, you know, was in this sort of situation in a much smaller sort of capacity. This is going to be really, really big, and we're going to have, you know, it's like Enron's all over the country. Because another thing that PUCA does, when you don't have a single state utility where the state can effectively regulate the utility rates and finances and transactions with their holding company, their owners, the SEC does that right now. And that's one of the things they really do under PUCA. They aren't so good on the merger enforcement. They've allowed a lot of big mergers. But they're really good on the financial regulation of utility owners. And they don't allow utilities to send up the money to the parent or loan them money or do anything without following strict rules. And that's all going to be gone once PUCA is repealed.
Right. And I read some of that and kind of got lost in the acronym soup of the different agencies there. Now, so $1 trillion in terms of utility assets could potentially be open to what's erroneously referred to as kind of free trade.
Right.
Including possible foreign ownership. Now, there's already foreign ownership of U.S. Utilities. There's a Scottish company that owns PacifiCorp, which is
That came from 1992, a partial repeal of PUCA, and also some clever lawyers. Congress even had that in mind.
Right.
But Scottish Power has to register with the Securities and Exchange Commission under PUCA. So Scottish Power is heavily regulated as a registered holding company.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be if PUCA's gone. And what we're really concerned about is not just a Scottish company, but the government of Scotland, or perhaps the government of France, or the government of China, who is now interested in owning oil companies, and oil companies are going to own utilities. If the government of China, you know, could own utilities, as they will be able to once PUCA's gone, unless, you know, some other part of the government just stops them for security reasons, they will be free to own and to acquire utilities.
So now back to the $1 trillion in assets. That's obviously a big motivator among folks who, buy and sell companies and deal with there's mergers and acquisitions, but there's something else
the
that I'm thinking.
Investment banks and the private equity funds are just going to go wild. They've already started with PUCA exempt power plants. Again, in 1992, certain power plants that sell only at wholesale were exempted from PUCA. Those are being largely bought up by investment banks and private equity funds.
And now the big change here is the fact that they wouldn't have to divest their other investments to own utilities.
Right. Warren Buffett is not going to divest everything else in Berkshire Hathaway just to own PacifiCorp, you know. He's just not going to do that.
Okay.
GE is not going to get rid of their electric equipment business and everything else in order to own utilities. Chevron is not going to get rid of its oil business in order to own utilities. So that's why it has kept all of those companies out of the business of owning public utilities all these years.
You're listening.
But that will all change.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland. We're talking about the Public Utility Holding Company Act provision within the Energy Policy Act that the House and Senate have both passed, but is going to conference to try and resolve differences. My guests are Lynn Hargis, who you just heard speaking. She works with the Critical Mass Energy Project at Public Citizen, and you can find out more about them online at www.citizen.org. And Kelpie Wilson joins us from Southern Oregon, where she's been a longtime activist, and she's currently writing for Truth Out, in part about the energy bill. And you can find out about her at www.kelpiewilson.com. And that's K-E-L-P-I-E-W-I-L-S-O-N The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm also has links to them, as well as a whole bunch of other information related to the energy bill and PUCA. So, Kelpi, you'd mentioned previously that you'd been following the energy policy bills, or it's, I mean, it's still the same bill, but it isn't, because it's never been passed, but it's different than it was a few years ago. Now, strategy, it seems, at this point, to eliminate the PUCA repeal are either to find a representative or a senator that's willing to stand up and take it out, if that's possible, or to just organize to kill the whole energy bill again. Do you see those as really the two options available?
Well, the first one is pretty slim, although I do want to mention that Oregonians do have a decent champion here in the form of our Senator Wyden, who
this time
been,
he did, yeah.
You know, fairly outspoken against the PUCA repeal, I think because of, you know, his experience with Pacific Corps and, you know, other Oregon utility disasters. So, you know, he is on the conference committee, and people should definitely ask him to be a champion in this. You know, it's really a super uphill battle. And then, you know, maybe really the best chance for doing in this PUCA repeal and the energy bill is going to come from the Republicans and Tom, in the form of Tom DeLay and his insistence on the MTBE liability shield, which, if people don't know what that is, it's a gasoline additive that pollutes groundwater. And for the last few years, that's actually been the thing that's killed the bill, because he's insisted that it stay in, and that is a deal killer for a lot of senators, because people in the Northeast don't want these giant oil companies shielded from all liability over this horribly polluting gasoline additive.
Well, and it was a cause for controversy regarding a NAFTA case in Canada, and that's why we're still dealing with this.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah, it's and then there's also this, the price of the bill. You know, that the Senate bill is less than the House bill, and there's an awful lot of subsidies for both oil and gas and nuclear, and in both bills. And so, you know, when it comes back to the Senate, you know, for a vote, even if they do reach some sort of resolution, it could get voted down.
Do you want to?
So really, people just need to make an outcry and talk to Senator Wyden, and also see if they can get Senator Smith in this state to make some commitments regarding the energy bill.
Well, and the reason, I mean, you and I are here in the Pacific Northwest. The Pacific Northwest has some of the cheapest electricity in the entire country, and I imagine that that is at least in part due to the fact that PUCA exists. I mean, the development of electricity in the region really followed the passage of PUCA to a large extent. And that's, I imagine, some of the reason why there is so much public power here, is it was just kind of a late, you know, it was late in electrifying as a region.
I don't know the whole history of it. I think one of the biggest reasons why we have cheap power here is because of hydroelectric power, which is,
well, but
you
it's
know, definitely one of the cheapest sources of power.
Right, but it's also mostly publicly owned.
Right,
you know,
either
through the federal government or just individual local utilities.
Yeah, and I actually like to draw your attention here to an article from the Business Press. You know, Lynn was correct in saying the Business Press has been covering this, kind of salivating over the prospect here. But this is actually a critical article from Oregon Business Magazine by a man named Bill Parrish. He sent me this article, and he's talking about Pacific Corps and Warren Buffett's proposal to acquire it. And this is an interesting example of how a financial company like Berkshire Hathaway could start milking profits from utilities in Oregon, and you know, divert money from ratepayers to their own ends. And what he says is that, you know, Berkshire Hathaway is got a huge cash reserve. It's like oil companies in that sense. It's got a huge cash reserve, you know, because of its insurance business. And what they will actually do is one of the reasons why the business press is, or business people are really excited about this PUCA repeal is that, or one of the things they're saying about it is that, oh, we have to have it because the utilities that need all this investment, and this is going to be a great thing for America because all this capital will flow into our utilities, which really need the investment to upgrade transmission lines and so forth. And so what this article says is that they will, Berkshire Hathaway will become the bank of PacifiCorp. In other words, it will show that all this investment needs to happen. We're going to bring capital to these utilities, and it will loan money to the utilities. It'll loan money to PacifiCorp, which it owns, and it can charge any interest rate it wants. So it'll charge, you know, they give an example of MidAmerican, which is a Iowa-based utility that Berkshire Hathaway already bought, and they borrowed, MidAmerican borrowed $1.5 billion from Berkshire Hathaway, and it's now paying 11.5% interest. So these are usurious interest rates, and this is one of the ways that these financial companies will use utilities to skim off money for their own profit.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, when Montana Power Company, I don't know if you know about that, but it went bankrupt. And the reason was that they decided, the executives, to make more money by going into the telecom business and selling off the utility assets. Well, 60 Minutes did a show on that one, actually, which ran twice. And they determined that the name of the show was Who Killed Montana Power? And they determined it was Goldman Sachs, the investment banker, because Goldman made such huge fees off of the various transactions. And now the people of Montana are faced with really high electric rates from the power plants they used to own, but they no longer own, and they have to buy the power back from the people who bought them, and they're, you know, fighting like crazy about that right now. But this is just, you know, this is the kind of thing the investment bankers, the insurance companies, the even GE may be more interested in the capital aspects of owning utilities these days than just simply selling them nuclear turbines, although that's probably going to be a very profitable business for them. But it's just, you know, they stand to make so much money, all these various interests, off of utilities.
Well, and it'd be a lot easier for GE to sell new nuclear generators to utilities it owns.
Yes, it would, and it would be a shame for the nation's nuclear policy to be determined for that reason instead of, you know, on other grounds.
Now, with all this discussion about capitalization and investment banking, I imagine that some people are viewing this as a means to throw a, because the whole Social Security privatization effort at the moment anyway is going nowhere fast, which is good. And Wall Street had been counting on that for a tremendous cash infusion or investment infusion. I'm curious if, you know, is Wall Street kind of shopping around industry to industry or large pool of money to large pool of money to find something that it can get its hands on? Is that some of what's going on here, or is it making that up?
Warren Buffett is considered to be right up there in terms of the capitalists and the investors in the country. And he's just been saying, you know, he and MidAmerican have been the greatest, biggest lobbyists against PUCA, trying to repeal it, because he wants to get into that business because, you know, he recognizes the steady revenues that would come in. So he's been talking about it for a while, and I think the people, when you look at what happened just in 1992 with Enron and all the others going in when there was just a partial repeal and they were allowed to be power marketers and own these merchant power plants, there was just a huge sort of minor frenzy of power plant buying, and Southern Company, a big registered holding company under PUCA, spun off its PUCA-exempt utilities to Mirant, which went bankrupt, and XL, a big registered company, spun off its to NRG, which went bankrupt. There have been a lot of bankruptcies, and the public has sort of not seen this, in addition to, of course, Enron going bankrupt. But, you know, this was just a little, I call it the hors d'oeuvres as to what's going to come when PUCA's repeal, because this is just, you know, a very partial PUCA repeal.
And if I recall correctly, the vast majority, like 90% of the bankruptcies in the utility sector have been private companies, not public.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And there has never been a PUCA-regulated electric utility holding company that's gone bankrupt in 70 years, not one. And that's PUCA. It's protecting those. And in fact, Standard & Poor's has said, you know, that the stuff about we need, you know, more investment in the utility sector is nonsense because the PUCA-regulated utilities are better off financially and therefore attract more investment than the ones who've been exempted.
Okay, so we've got a couple of minutes left here. Lynn, why don't you go first here and just offer a couple suggestions on how folks can provide meaningful input in saving PUCA at this point.
Well, I think to contact your congresspeople, your senators and congresspeople, which we don't have in Washington, D.C., but to contact them and let them know that you know about PUCA and that you want them to oppose any energy bill that has PUCA in it. Because I think there's a lot of latent support for the statute, but people have just sort of given up and say, you know, nobody knows, nobody cares, we can't get the message across. So, you know, if you contact people and let them know the message has gotten across and that, you know, you want them to protect PUCA, that would be just extremely important.
And, Kelpie, any suggestions on ways that folks can generate more media coverage of this so more people can hear about it at this point?
Yeah, I would suggest that if anyone who can, please write a letter to the editor of your local paper because, you know, letters to the editor are one of the most read sections of the paper, mm-hmm. first of all, and you might get a reporter interested in doing a story. It's a complicated issue, so, you know, it's hard to write about, but check out my articles at truthout.org, you know, for background information. Go to the Public Citizen website. You can encapsulate it in a couple paragraphs, and that's the thing is people just don't know about it.
I did write PUCA for Dummies, which is on our website, and even PUCA Repeal for Dummies to help explain, you know, simplify it because it's a very complex statute.
Yep, and both of those are at the People Rise Up website as well.
Well, okay.
Thank you very much to both of you for joining me this morning to talk about the possible repeal of PUCA.
Thank you for taking an interest.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
And that's been Kelpie Wilson, Oregon activist, writer, editor, etc. She's available online at kelpiewilson.com. And that's K-E-L-P-I-E Wilson.com. And you can also find out about Lynn Hargis and what they're doing at the Critical Mass Energy Project at www.citizen.org. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm. At the program schedule, click on Wednesday morning at 10, has a whole bunch of links related to this program and many, many previous ones. If you'd like to get in touch with me about this or anything else you've heard on the airwaves here, well, this program anyway, you can send me email at kboo@riseup.net. You can also send postal mail to Andrew Geller, KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Street, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you very much for listening.